Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Indeed, and here we are. And we are glad you are with us today. I've got Dr. Samara Umat, and today, at least for a little while, we had Dr. Michael Gilbert on the previous show. And by the way, if you don't know about our previous show, you can go to our website, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top right-hand side of the page, and you can find out where we are for all 4 hours of live call-in radio every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 on another station, and then these 2 hours, 10 to noon, right here on 570 KVI, where we have been since 1999. How about that? Over 20 years. Kind of cool. Anyway, I was able to convince I had to get on the other side of the studio, put a half Nelson on Dr. Michael Gilbert. And after a few painful moments, he said, okay, I will stay. And
he is persuasive, if not.
Yes. And so this is really good news for you folks. This is kind of unexpected. And if you have a question about your eyesight, we've talked about the majesty, the beauty, the miracle, the how unbelievable the eyes are. It's just totally, it's indescribable. You cannot describe the mystery of eyes. It's just incredible. But we do the best we can, and if you have concerns, maybe cataracts, maybe your doctor has said, yes, you've got cataracts, but don't worry about them. When they get to be a lot worse and really are bugging you, we'll deal with them then. I know a whole lot of doctors say ophthalmologists will be telling you that. Maybe that doesn't seem to sit well with you. Why don't you ask this guy right here,
well,
Dr. Michael Gilbert?
That's called the myths of ophthalmology. Remember he talked to us about that? That was just fascinating. I loved that talk, by the way.
And one of the most interesting things is not only do I find that patients, just as a trend in the country, certainly in my practice, is to have cataracts fixed earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. I had mine fixed in my 50s. Why? It's because the decrease in risk, the improvement in technology for recovering your vision, but that has continued to move to the degree that I am constantly seeing patients come in now who are 50 or above, who are dissatisfied with their vision, and it turns out that they don't have cataracts yet, but they want the best vision possible. They're past the age where LASIK is the ideal answer. The answer is something called refractive lens exchange. It's the lens that's degenerating, the lens that's making them increasingly dissatisfied with their natural vision. But that degeneration starts in your 40s, actually before that, but it starts to become noticeable in your 40s and tends to get worse and worse, affecting both near, intermediate, and distance vision. And so there are many patients in their 50s and beyond who are dissatisfied with their vision or components of it, especially the loss of near vision. And because of the technologies that we have now, we can replace that with a near-natural lens that can give you simultaneous distance and near vision without having to put on bifocals. So natural vision can be restored. Now, oftentimes that technology means retraining the brain just a little bit because you haven't had that near vision for a while, and or you used to read at a different point in space because that near vision keeps changing. So there are always changes and adaptations, but it, the technology continues to improve.
Evolve. And so from the brain training point of view, it would sound reasonable to assume that you want to do that procedure sooner rather than later.
That from both from brain training and the ease, and you want the surgeon to have an easy job.
Right, of course.
As that lens degenerates, it gets harder, so more energy to remove it, slight increased risk. So there were several reasons that I had it done in my 50s, but, you know, it was an easy, easy choice. I am a little bit of a perfectionist. Just because you're 50 doesn't mean it's time for lens surgery. But if you're not satisfied with your vision, it's most likely the place to start.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. We're going to take a call real fast right now because I've got Vicki from Woodinville, who was on hold for a long time on our previous show, and we suggested that she call now. And I just,
hi, Vicki.
I don't have it in my heart to keep you waiting any longer, Vicki. So go ahead and ask Dr. Gilbert what you would like to ask.
Okay, so I'm going to make this real quick. Our son, who is in his early 50s, had a stroke in at the end of June, and it's called a Wallenberg syndrome stroke. It is an unusual type of stroke, but what it has, he's recovered from most of the effects, but the effect that is the worst is his eyes. His left eye constantly moves. He is seeing an ocular therapist, and because the left eye continually moves, it throws off his equilibrium and with the dizziness. And so I'm just wondering if you have ever had any experience with that type of a syndrome.
You're right, it's rare. Stroke caused neurologic changes affecting the eye, and it's most usually it's involving the vision tracts rather than the neuromuscular tracts. So by far the vast majority of stroke related changes in vision are losses of portion of the peripheral or central vision. The one thing I'll say about strokes in general is that there can be some recovery. So part of that recovery is, you know, and I generally think of the window where you can recover is somewhere around 6 months, but in truth, it's a little bit longer than that. So it's worth testing and checking over that first 12 months to look for some recovery. I would make sure that, has he seen a neuro-ophthalmologist?
I don't know. I know he's seen a neurologist. You know, he has had tests and everything done, but I don't know about an optical one.
Yeah, that's a rare breed. There are only a couple that I can think of in Western Washington, which is to say all of Washington. If you want to give a call to the office and leave a message, I'll get you the name of those two, both based in Seattle. I think there's actually a junior partner in the group now. But that I would make sure that, especially for that kind of syndrome, you want someone who has seen many of those. Because it's so rare, none of us have a large patient base. And retraining is possible that it could help, but when we have a neurologic base like that, just training is probably not going to be his ultimate answer. So I think a neuro-ophthalmologist would be the next stop if he has not.
Yeah. You know, with the stroke having occurred just in June, he's still in the window where he can recover.
Right.
And this affects the brain stem. So the nystagmus that she's referring to will probably get better. You know,
there's a good chance of that.
There's a good chance.
It's really hard to predict how much the percentage of recovery.
Yeah.
But that nystagmus, and for those who are listening, nystagmus by definition means that the eye muscles, then there are six muscles that control each eye. So imagine, for us to have our eyes coordinated, it involves the brain coordinating 12 muscles every fraction of a waking second, or we see double. So you can imagine if the neurologic stimulus to one of those muscles, or one on each side or more, are not perfectly coordinated, your eyes are moving at such a in such a direction or way that the brain can't process or put the information together.
Right.
Sometimes that movement is, most commonly it's horizontal.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be circular. So the movement is unique to the tract that's damaged. But it can be very hard on the brain processing that change in vision. If that happens very early in life, the brain has never seen without that.
Yeah.
So the brain is able to adapt to that nystagmus. So you have patients, not only children, but adults who have had nystagmus, that oscillating eye, all their life. So while they don't have good vision, the brain has come to grips with it.
Right.
The challenge comes when a situation like your son, where it's suddenly imposed on the brain and it has no ability to adapt to it. It's very hard to adapt to.
Yeah, he's young, so hopefully he will get good recovery. But that also concerns me as to why such a young gentleman had an ischemic stroke, right?
Of course.
And so it leads me to think about, okay, clearly it happened, but is there some underlying nutritional or other things that they could be doing to help with his vision now and with future reducing his risk for recurrence? So you really need to know what caused this. Does it have something to do with his blood clotting or something else that precipitated this ischemic?
Hypertension, clotting disorders, all of those things I am sure have been looked at, if not urgently must be done. Because while we're trying, not only hoping for natural recovery, but also trying to push that and optimize you also have to really have one eye on how can we prevent another episode.
That's exactly right, to figure out what caused this first one so that you can prevent a second one from occurring.
Anything else, Vicki?
No, I think that you have given me a lot of information, and I will call Dr. Gilbert's office Monday and get the name of those two people. And he had a procedure. He had had a growth in his throat, and he had a procedure in November, and they were trying to do the scope down his throat and remove it that way and cauterize it down, but they couldn't get the scope down there. So they manipulated his neck for about 15 minutes, still couldn't get it done, so they had to go on the top of the skin at his throat to remove this growth. But so the clot started at the second vertebrae from the brain. And, of course, you know, we have thoughts, but, you know, you can't pinpoint anything. He's very healthy. He doesn't have high cholesterol. He doesn't have high blood pressure. He was a runner, everything. So that's all we know going into it about why it might have been caused.
Well, I'm glad you got some information here, Vicki. Thank you so much. We wish you and your son well.
Yeah, good
luck.
That
is for sure. And with that, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of reasons to call Dr. Michael Gilbert's phone number to make an appointment or to get information. 425-450-2020. 425-450-2020. Now, I didn't mention this earlier, but Dr. Jerry Mixon is not here today. He is in a caravan in eastern Washington, a Trump caravan. Oh, yes. That will irritate so many people. In any event, because he was going to be gone, we got together this last week. And we need to go to a break right now, so let's head into a break. But we got together and recorded a couple of little things that we can play today. So when we come back from the next break, you're going to hear a little bit of information about the lockdown. It's been in the news, obviously, And you're going to enjoy this. So we're going to take a little detour. We do have Dr. Michael Gilbert here with Dr. Umat. But for the next 10 minutes after the break, you're going to hear from Dr. Jerry Mixon about the lockdown and some of his thoughts. Oh, you want to stay for this.
We decided we needed something to make us feel younger and healthier. I didn't want to do it by myself. I knew that Larry had to come with me.
Since I've become a longevity patient, I just feel wonderful now. If you're thinking about attending a seminar, go. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Longevity is a miracle for us.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone, so in love are we two that we don't know what to do, so in love, in the world our own, as we stroll by the sea together.
Doesn't that just give you a warm fuzzies? Well, if you're as old as I am, that does anyway. Welcome back. Pete Talbot here. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine today with Dr. Michael Gilbert, at least for a while here. And we've got Dr. Samira Umat. Dr. Mixon is not here, but as I said, leading into the last break, he's in Eastern Washington right now, but he came into the studio and we recorded a few little things that he still wanted to share. This one, we'll play the recording right now. This is about the lockdown or the possibilities of more lockdowns, what have you. I think you'll find it interesting. Here we go.
Again, Jerry, I'm glad we've taken this time, even though you're not here really in the studio with us. You were real eager to talk to us about yet another topic that has been in the press a whole lot lately.
It has been. And I am a signatory to the Great Barrington Declaration.
The Great Barrington.
I love the name of that.
I love it.
The Great Barrington Declaration.
Okay.
the Barrington Declaration is, at this moment, about 35,000 physicians and infectious disease scientists that have all signed a declaration stating that lockdowns need to end. They were stupid to start with, but we didn't know that. We thought, remember, we were going to lock down for 2 weeks.
Yes, that's right. 2 weeks.
2 weeks to bend the curve.
Yeah.
That would, you all remember that, right?
Oh, yes.
We're going to lock down for 2 weeks. We're going to close the schools for up to 3 weeks, and we will bend the curve because we don't want to overwhelm the medical care system. Well, the medical care system never got overwhelmed. The number of hospitalized patients declined significantly. But what we found is the number of cases declined equally fast in the states that did draconian lockdowns and the states that did very mild lockdowns, and even the places that did almost no lockdown. In all cases, it peaked and then it declined, no matter what we did or didn't do in the way of lockdowns.
Really?
Which is really kind of bizarre.
Was that mask or no mask?
No, we didn't say mask or no mask. We said lockdowns.
Okay.
All right. Shutting down all the businesses and sending people into bankruptcy and causing people to commit suicide at increased rates.
Increasing
the rates of depression, increasing the rates of drug abuse, increasing the rates of heart attacks from anxiety and stress, decreasing visits for cancer screening and so on, helping diabetics to get out of control because they're at home eating, closing the gym so nobody could exercise. These things have been very destructive to the society. Okay? Masks were a good idea. Too bad they lied about the masks up front. You remember the experts, Dr. Fauci and the Surgeon General of the United States, but also the World Health Organization, all told us initially, masks don't help. You should not go out and buy a mask. You remember that? All the experts told us that. Okay. But it was odd because they also said, we want to save those masks for the people that really need them. Well, if the masks don't help, why do the doctors and nurses need them? That made no sense to start with.
Right.
But, you know, this was government and world government at that, and so it's more lame-brained than usual, I'm afraid. So, but that was the initial story. And then it was, we're all going to lock down for 2 weeks to bend the curve, but you guess what? 2 weeks stretched into 3 weeks, which stretched into another 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks, and then a month, and now we've been locked down for 7 months. And some poor states like New York and Southern California are in even far worse shape than we are here in Washington State. Okay. Some of them have locked down and are in really tight lockdowns. And yet the viral load is growing. California has an enormous viral load, about the same as Florida, which is not locked down, where virtually everything is open in Florida.
Sure.
Disney World is open. Disneyland is closed because it's in California.
Okay. Different governors,
different politics, right. Not different virus, not different susceptibility. Okay. But the fact is the lockdowns have simply not been effective. They've been effective at destroying many lives, but they have not been effective at getting rid of the virus. In the real world, anything you do to slow the spread of the virus only stretches out the epidemic. The virus is going to continue going through the population. It's going to spread from person to person, and it's going to do so until herd immunity is acquired. And you can acquire herd immunity quickly, or you can acquire herd immunity slowly. Now, when it first hits the population and is growing at a logarithmic rate, you want to slow it. That's what the two-week lockdown was for. You don't want to overwhelm the capacity of the healthcare system to handle it. But that doesn't get rid of the virus. It simply slows its peak. Okay? Now, we've long passed the most dangerous peaks, the time in which large numbers of very susceptible elderly people were getting sick and dying. We have more people sick right now than we had at the peak when they were all dying. But we have much fewer deaths. And that's because currently it's younger people getting the virus. What the Great Barrington Declaration says is that we need to protect the vulnerable. If we're going to have lockdowns, we should lock down the elderly, the morbidly obese, the diabetic, the people with congestive heart failure, the people that are at risk of dying need to be isolated and protected. The young population that is not at risk of dying or has very low risk, a young person, a teenager, has 1/1000th of the chance of dying that an 80-year-old has if they both get the virus.
Right.
Okay, you get two groups get the virus, 1,000 80-year-olds will die for each kid.
My goodness, yeah.
Assuming the same number of people got infected.
Right.
Because kids don't get infected as easy, and when they get infected, they don't die. So what we have to do is to let the people that are least danger go ahead and live their lives. Yes, be sensible, wash your hands, use a mask in a crowd, but open the schools, open athletic events, open the gyms, let people go out and lead their lives and enjoy their lives and get the care they need while protecting the people that are at high risk. For every time another low-risk person gets infected and all he gets is a sniffle for 3 days, we're closer to herd immunity. Now, the other way to get herd immunity is, of course, with a vaccine. If you go out and you vaccinate everybody. But we've got politicians saying that because this vaccine is being developed under the Trump administration, they won't take it, and they're discouraging people from taking the vaccine.
That's right.
Well, okay. Don't take the vaccine if you don't want it, but recognize that you are going to become part of the herd immunity with or without the vaccine. You're either going to become immune because you took the vaccine, or you're going to become immune because you're going to eventually catch the virus. But it's going to happen either way. And the virus is going to reach herd immunity in our population one way or the other. And right now they're telling us that we're having trouble with our vaccination program. We've had two more of the vaccines over the weekend, this past weekend, that were shut down on their trials because of complications and unforeseen problems.
Side effects or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so we don't know if and when they will open up again. And so, you know, the chances of us getting a vaccine actually out in use in October is virtually zero now. November, maybe one of them will come on board. But we're probably somewhere after the first of the year, and it may be March or April before we actually have enough to vaccinate the vast bulk of the people and get herd immunity that way. And so can you really afford to wait another 7 months? No, not the way we've been doing it.
Well, just a few days ago, the World Health Organization did a major reversal. Mm-hmm. That's certainly been in the press.
They said lockdowns are counterproductive and need to be discouraged. Yeah. Even the World Health Organization is finally coming around to recognizing some of the science. So the Great Barrington Declaration is basically tens of thousands of doctors and research scientists saying viruses don't go away just because we shut down. Shutdown slows the spread, but it's going to continue spreading. And all it does is lengthen the duration of time. And it's better that we develop herd immunity among people that are not going to get very sick or die and protect the people that are vulnerable until we do have a vaccine for them.
You know, Longevity Medical Clinic has been successful since you started it in 1998. Few ups and downs when we've gotten started, but business has been good. The practice, you know, a lot of patients. But since the pandemic started, the number of new patients that we are acquiring
has gone up
yeah. Because people are starting to realize there's never been a better time to get serious about your health.
Well, and they're recognizing that being sedentary and overweight and tired puts them at higher risk of dying of the virus. You know, if you're strong, fast, lean, smart, and sexy, your chances of dying of the virus are almost nothing. I had a meeting today. I met with my doctors for about 4 hours today. And it's interesting, out of our thousands of patients, we have had a total of three who caught the virus.
No kidding, is that all?
And no one got very sick.
Only three? Come
so far,
on.
We've been keeping track. We've only had three who got sick.
Minor.
Now, they may have had the virus and been asymptomatic.
Okay, yeah.
Had no symptoms, didn't know they were sick.
Even better.
Yeah. But yeah, we had three people get sick. Nobody die. Okay.
Boy, that is an amazing statistic.
Our patients are healthy. The virus kills the unhealthy. Our patients are healthy. We make them lean, strong, fast, smart, and sexy.
That sounds almost so wonderfully true.
This is.
I can't help myself, folks. Maybe you're sitting there at home, in your car, at work, wherever you are this Saturday, and you've been listening to this show over the months, years, maybe decades, some of you, and you've never taken that step of getting more information. Well, hey, that's why we created the free health analysis appointments. For goodness sakes, there has never been a better time for you to take care of your health. Never been a better time for you to deal and build up your immune system. There's never been a better time for you to deal with comprehensive hormone replacement therapy with good counseling and coaching regarding diet and exercise and general lifestyle issues. That's what we do. And so why don't you grab one of the free health analysis appointments? I think it makes really good sense. And you get the two free tests, the blood test and the special in-body test, which is fascinating, by the way. And you'll understand what some of your basic health risks are. So you'll know whether it makes sense for you to consider at that point becoming a patient at Longevity. So go to our website. You make your appointment on your own on our website at lmclinic.com. Easy to do. Just push the schedule appointment now button And it's very, very easy to do. We have appointments. Definitely, we have plenty of appointments right now, the free health analysis appointments. And if you would like to make one, you do it at lmclinic.com. And basically, some of you, if you don't have a computer, you can't get online to do that. You can also call 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG. Hey, this has been good, Jerry. Thank you much. Time for a break. More calls when we come back.
The thing that struck both of us most strongly right from the beginning was libido. Our sex drive went out the roof. It was like being 18 years old again. It was pretty wonderful. And it was something we had been missing for quite some time.
Seven minutes past the hour. This is part of the music I listen to on my walks every day. I'm into the 50s and 60s. Can't help it, just the way I am. I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert with us. We had a nice little visit there, pre-recorded with Dr. Mixon, about the lockdown and things, and it is quite amazing.
You know, when you said you're into the 50s and 60s, well, I was going to say, so what's the surprise here? You are 50 or 60, right?
No, I'm 71.
Well, that's your chronological age. We're talking about your physiological age.
That's right. Jerry, I walked into a meeting the other day here at the office, and Jerry was telling people that I am doing better today than when he first met me in 1999. So, and it is true. I'm happier. I'm more productive, and life is very, very good. Thanks to longevity, really. I joke about this often. Vicki and I often, when we pray together, just thanking God for various things, we often, she's usually the one that brings it up first in prayer. Thanking God for longevity.
Nice.
Because it has made such a big difference in her life and my life and lives of some of our friends and relatives. It's a big deal. We're thankful. Anyway, and I'm thankful I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert here. So let's take some more calls, shall we? Let us go to Bellevue and talk to Sue. Sue, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. You're on Leading Edge Medicine.
Okay. Thank you very much. Dr. Gilbert, question for you. My daughter, who's 47, got COVID kind of in the beginning, probably from her daughter, who was 15 and still going to school in March. So it's been 7 months. She's had everything, breathing, heart rate, exhaustion, shaking hands and whatnot. And they did put her on a steroid inhaler that just until recently she was doing twice a day. She's finally beginning to get better, but the blurry vision that she's had for quite a long time is still with her. Now, she's always had very good health and perfect vision, never needed glasses or whatever, never had really any underlying conditions. But I guess it can attack any part of your body because there's probably no part of her body it hasn't attacked. But the blurry vision is what seems to be there. She has a great attitude, and she said, maybe I just have to live with not being able to read small print. If she puts on cheaters, she can read small print. But before, she could read the teeniest print and see distance great. So I'm wondering, we're assuming it must be the COVID because it came on during this whole 7 months of different symptoms. What can she do, and do you know why it affects the vision?
Well, before I make a diagnosis, it's a good idea to examine the patient.
Sure.
If I had to speculate, the most likely reason would be tear production if she can put in a drop of artificial tears, and it improves it even for a few minutes, then it has to do with the tear production. There are a number of reasons that might have happened during either her COVID recovery or just during the pandemic period. We're seeing a large increase in dry eye symptoms. And so that's certainly possibly, a good reason why it might be. And I mentioned a bit earlier, but I think it was on the other station, that that during the pandemic period, it's very common for dry eye symptoms. And one of the things that's very different, there's a big difference in diagnostic clues if she can read for a short time and then the vision, then her reading vision is poor.
Even if she just gets up in the morning, it doesn't matter when. The blurry vision for close-up is gone. I mean, it's blurry. It's like looking through water or something.
Does it?
But
so
not her other vision. It's small print.
So it might be easier to actually ask her about subtleties of this. But one of the questions I'd be asking is it equally blurred all day long, or does it get worse as the day goes on? And is there any comfort change that also happens? But that's somewhat easy to check if either improving the light or putting in a drop of artificial tears makes any difference, then at least you have a hint of part of why it is. Certainly, at the age of 47, that's exactly when presbyopia begins to gradually increase in symptoms. And that's where you either have to hold things out further or reach for over-the-counter reading glasses or have glasses made that optimize your vision. So that is a normal part. And for the vast majority, at least in theory, that's a linear progression. But many people's experience is that it happens acutely.
So with the acute presentation, Dr. Gilbert, could it be precipitated by an inflammatory or an infective or a stressful episode like this?
Sure. Let's say that because of her age, she's on the margin of those symptoms anyway. She's right on the cusp, that she's compensated. But at 47, that's right when you start to lose that near vision.
Sure.
And then because of the infection, she has a mild degree of corneal inflammation or subtle loss of the tear film. And that precipitates her being
there
over the edge.
Yeah.
Suddenly I can't read.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's multifactorial. It's not just that she's presbyopic. It's that she's on the cusp of presbyopia. And then some of those surface symptoms that either some cornea inflammation, which means she needs to get evaluated, or the slower production that can be exacerbated by our pandemic situation, being the dry eye component. So they're, I think, most likely.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to come up with one diagnosis,
not
three.
Multiple.
But
right.
Certainly, if I had to guess what's going on, which I regret on the radio we do, I would say it's probably multifactorial. Because of her age, she probably was on the cusp of that degradation, and this just pushed her over the edge. But what that also means is we should be able to get some or all of that back to where she was if we can fix those things that are directly due to the COVID.
Do you know the likelihood, as other things before she couldn't walk upstairs without her heart beating 130 and exhaustion, and those things have gotten better and some have gone away. So obviously her body has been fighting the inflammation that obviously existed throughout. Would that also be true of the eye, or is that such a different thing than the rest of her body that it might not? Do you think it could resolve on her own?
Part of my training in medicine is to look at those things that'll take care of themselves, and more commonly, how can I help them resolve? Some of the symptoms you describe, like walking up the stairs, there's not a great deal that we can do. It's just time for that to heal. But ocular inflammation is inherently destructive. So if there's some ocular inflammation, then there's probably a component of permanent damage being done if that's not treated. And the HOPE theory of inflammation treatment is generally ineffective. That's something to get first diagnosed. If you don't measure, you don't know.
Right.
And once it's checked and either eliminated as a possibility or better understood to what degree it's adding to her problems, then I think we can get a hold of it. And maybe it's just time for her to use some over-the-counter reading glasses or something like that.
And as Dr.
She bought the cheaters, and that's what she's doing. And she's in a lot of the long hauler COVID groups where thousands of people internationally in U.S. are reporting. So there's nothing she's had that thousands of other people haven't had differently or, you know, whatever. So this is one of the things that other people have noticed is kind of quick onset of blurry vision.
That's why I'd get it checked.
Yeah, I think you bring up a very important point. We had Dr. Maiden here who also said that cardiac patients are showing up late for evaluations. They're all putting things off. And I think you're highlighting the fact if you're symptomatic, come in for an evaluation. Let's figure out what's going on and get you treated quickly rather than late.
And with that in mind, thank you, Sue. Excellent call. Hope that has been helpful. And it reminds me of what Dr. Mixon often says, first diagnosis. Then therapy. So let's get that
right,
done.
Right, exactly.
And with that in mind, I do believe I have Dr. Jerry Mixon on the
Ooh.
Line.
Oh.
Calling in from some mysterious place on the planet. Jerry, are you there, sir?
I'm here. You hear me?
Yes,
oh,
we
yeah.
do. Yes, we do. Where are you?
All right. Well, we are in between Clem and Ellensburg right now.
All right, my old stomping ground.
That's right, your old stomping grounds. My daughter had a wonderful time going through Cleon, blowing the horn at all the bystanders.
Good.
So we are in a Trump motorcade right now. My wife informed me a few days ago that I was going to skip the show on Saturday and do a Trump motorcade.
Well, that's good.
We have outfitted our SUV with an American flag on the right side and a Trump 2020 on the left side, and have joined an enormously line of cars that left North Bend Outlet Mall parking lot at 9 this morning, and we are just going through all the small towns, waving and honking and having a lot of fun.
So, oh, that's great. You're getting lots of people coming out. Do the people in like Clayellum, did they know you were coming?
Well, some apparently did, because there were people standing along the route with flags and signs of their own.
Oh, good. Okay.
I decided to do this in large measure because of my daughter. You know, she's 8 years old. She is in a very elite sort of school where the other political party holds enormous sway. And the teachers have not been very supportive. She has felt very isolated as a Trump and / Republican in her classroom. So we decided to take her out and show her that there's a lot of other people in this world that agree with her.
Isn't that something? Well, it's kind of interesting with the background of your wife. I'm not sure how much you want to share about that, but obviously she's from China, and the thought of her being a Trump supporter and a rather major one is kind of fascinating.
Well, it surprised me. You know, Vandine was, as you said, she was born and raised in Chengdu, China. And, you know, politics in China is dangerous. If you say what the party doesn't want to hear, you can literally disappear and never be seen again. You know, right along with your parents, your kids, and your siblings. So when she came to America, she was very hesitant to express any political opinions. She had a lifetime being taught not to do that. So for the first many years of our marriage, she would, her ballot would come printed in Chinese, I would fill out mine, then I would copy mine onto hers for her, and her answer was, you fill it out, I'll sign it. So I had 2 votes the first many years of our marriage. But I came home one day in 2016, and she met me at the front door with a firm statement. She said, I don't know who you're voting for, but I'm voting for Trump. She has been my little Trumpkin ever since.
Well, you know, in China, yeah, it can be dangerous giving your opinion. But quite frankly, with the craziness that's going on now, it actually, I understand there's a recent study that shows that the number of people who are afraid or hesitant of sharing or telling anybody that they support Trump, that the number of people that feel that way is nearly 3 times greater than it was in 2016. And it was a big deal then.
Yeah, it's over 70% of Republicans feel that they are, you know, they are unable to express their opinion in public.
Well,
I guess my background is a little bit different in that, he tries to intimidate me out of anything, and I make a rude gesture and steam ahead. So,
well, facts can be a dangerous thing in today's liberal society. But Jerry, I'm glad you called in. Glad you're having fun.
Yep.
And I'm assuming you'll be back tonight, and so we will have you back.
Yeah, I'll be in the office on Monday, and I'll be back on the air with you guys next Saturday.
So, sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good, Jerry.
Take care.
Sounds good, Jerry.
Right. Well, I'm glad you
thanks
did.
Thanks for checking
glad
in. You did. Take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. All right. You know, this reminds me, even back in the early 1900s, there was an evangelist by the name of G.K. Chesterton, and he made the comment because he saw where we were headed as more and more biblical principles were being denied and what have you. And he said, we shall soon be in a world in which a man will be howled down for saying that 2 + 2 = 4, in which people will persecute the heresy of calling a triangle a three-sided figure, and they will hang a man for maddening the crowds with the news that grass is green. And that is where we are. It is getting more and more dangerous speaking the truth when there's so many delusional policies out there being perpetrated on society right now. So anyway, it takes guts to speak the truth. Hey, we have time for another call. Let us go to Buckley and talk to Charles. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Charles.
Morning.
My question is for Dr. Gilbert. The wife is going to go down and get some new glasses. Now, they say they have an optometrist. I guess, what's the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist?
Okay, it's very common to have confusion on this. Ophthalmologist is an MD, medical doctor. Training period is enormously longer in time and experience. Our training period includes surgery, and we cover hospitals in our training that exposes us to thousands and thousands of patients who have medical problems of the eye. Optometry comes from the term metric, to measure. So historically, optometrists measure the eye for glasses, and the practice of optometry had historically been limited to that. Through legislation and incremental training, they've been trying to expand that, and there are many well-trained optometrists with whom I'm comfortable doing medical components of the diagnosis. Most treatments can only be done by an ophthalmologist. Right back to the MD. So the OD, optometrist, is predominantly, their experience is more common, more rich in measuring vision changes in the eye than it is in the measurement, in the medical diagnoses. But many of them through study, have really expanded that and have some skills in both. So we have the MD and the OD.
Yes.
The third O is the optician. So optometrist, ophthalmologist, MD, optometrist, OD, and they're both doctors. So if it says doctor so-and-so, you don't really know which. And then the third would be the optician. And that's the one who, given a prescription, makes the glasses work for you.
I see. Because here's my question, too, is that years ago with my mother, she had problems with diabetes and stuff. But the thing is, she got the glasses, her glasses, and she couldn't really see through the, you know, the reading part of the glasses. And then my wife, she got glasses, and she's so complacent. And I go, why don't you go back right now and say, you really can't see to read really that well. And now, is there a reason that a lot of times they don't want to give a high-powered reading part of your glasses?
Well, let me address her described problem directly first. And that is, if she has a reasonably new pair of glasses where she's having a hard time reading, this is not uncommon. And the most common reason, by a huge margin, is they've put the reading technology in either, it's either misaligned or it's in a frame that disallows access to it. It's there in the glasses, but you can't see it. And there's a particularly large, successful, financially successful warehouse store that has decided to do opticianry, sell glasses. We all have memberships, or the vast majority of us do. But one of the things they do very poorly is progressive lenses. And because they don't measure carefully to put the reading technology in the right alignment for the eye. So you pay for it, but it often doesn't perform. So the first thing I would have them check is the prescription right in the glasses? Number one. Number two, is it aligned in such a way that your wife can access it when she reads? Because that's the usual reason. It's there, but it's in the wrong place. And then the third thing is, if both of those are true, then I'd get a second opinion on the prescription, because the prescription may be wrong. Now, if all of those three things have checked out and we've got the best prescription, it may just be that there's some medical reason that she's not able to get the best vision that she used to. That would be my greater medical concern and would be a good reason to see an ophthalmologist at the highest level of pathology training to make sure that she doesn't have some early diabetic retinopathy or cataracts or some other condition, you know, that would be age appropriate, that might explain why she's having that problem. So I would definitely say this is not something to sit on. It may be something as simple as the glasses weren't made quite right, or it could be, some early sign of sight-threatening changes that would be very important to determine.
And so, with that, I'm afraid, Charles, we are out of time. This is a hard break. I've got nothing I can do about it. We have to do a station ID, etc. But we will be back after 2 or 3 minutes of news and top of the hour stuff. How about that? And Michael Gilbert, can I keep you for about another 5 or 10 minutes? Because I've got one more call for you.
I'd be delighted.
Carol from Shoreline has a question about cataract surgery. And I know you are eager to get back to your family. You've got some activities going on. But we're going to keep Dr. Michael Gilbert for like another 10 minutes, okay? And don't go far. We'll be back before you know it.